It's an honor now to get a guy I love watching on MSNBC. He is Steve Schmidt. Steve, thanks so much for being with us.
It's great to be with you. Thank you for having me.
It's our pleasure. So you really have had an amazing political career. You worked on Republican campaigns, including those of George W. Bush, Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger, Arizona Senator John McCain. And on Wikipedia, and I always say if it's on Wikipedia, it has to be true, it says you're best known for pushing McCain to select Sarah Palin as his running mate. Now, is that true?
Well, not exactly. We'll always regret the moment in time when heading into the Republican convention down, and I'd taken over the campaign in early July of 2008 when it was down 16 points, and turned the campaign around. We were close, and really the two finalists were Governor Romney and Tim Pawlenty, the governor of Minnesota. And I just didn't think, given the headwinds that we were facing in 2008, we could win with either of them. And,
yeah,
you know, I said the immortal words standing on the front lawn of a beach house on Long Beach Island, you know, back to Rick Davis, who's the campaign manager. I said, I really don't know anything about her other than just the highest approval level of any governor in the country, but we ought to take a look at Sarah Palin. And the two responsibilities I wasn't vested with when I took over the campaign were the vetting of the vice presidential candidate and the Republican convention. So it was news to me when 3 days after we picked her, who knows, she couldn't find Iraq on a map, and I was pretty unhappy about it, to say the least. And our relationship was so good, they turned out to make a movie about it, you know. But no, you know, listen, she was someone who was deeply unqualified. She never had been picked. You know, it was a political pick in a circumstance where we're trying to win the election. And, you know, it was a big mistake. And I, you know, and I'll go to my grave believing, you know, John McCain always regrets that. And we all did. She had no business being on a national ticket at all.
By the way, the movie you refer to, the HBO film Game Change, I found it entirely entertaining. Do you think it was pretty true to what really happened?
Oh, for sure, for sure. I mean, there were times like it was like an out-of-body experience.
I can imagine.
I remember a couple of years ago I was reading something, and there was some study that said that, you know, gray hair, white hair has nothing to do with stress. And I was at the time, I was 37 years old, and I have the same volume of hair at 49 that I did at 37. But the hair I did have in late August of 2008 was clearly brown. And I went away after the campaign was over, and every picture from every day forward, it's been white. All white. So I know in 8 weeks that I can tell from experience I can reject that scientific study on hair graying under stress.
By the way, sidebar, I think Woody Harrelson did a great job portraying you in that film.
He's a great guy, too. He's a good friend over the years. And
cool.
Really, really talented actor.
Yeah, he is. So, for so many years, you were a Republican officially, but now you're an independent because of the Trump situation, right?
I am. Absolutely. Absolutely.
And talk, if you would, and we've, like I said, talked to Rick Wilson and Mike Madrid's on with us all the time, about the founding of the Lincoln Project and what it's all about for people who aren't quite sure.
Well, we've spent our careers in the Republican Party and much of our careers running Republican campaigns at high levels. I was one of the top strategists for President Bush. And, you know, as you mentioned, Senator McCain, Arnold Schwarzenegger, I ran the Supreme Court confirmations in the White House for Chief Justice Roberts and Justice Alito. Mm-hmm. I worked for Dick Cheney in the White House, was the counselor to the Vice President, Deputy Assistant to the President. I was the Communications Director at the National Republican Congressional Committee. So I was a member in good standing in the party. I come from a wing of the party that was represented by the Tom Paines and Christy Whitmans of the world. If you made me put a label on myself, I would have described myself as a Jack Kemp Republican. When Schwarzenegger ran for re-election, we got 40% of the Latino vote, 27% of the black vote in the state. When Bush ran for re-election, we were at 40% of the Hispanic vote. You know, I was an advocate for what Ken Mellman did, which is to go to the NAACP and apologize for the Republican Party Southern strategy in the Nixon era. And, you know, I was a belief in empowerment and opportunity and the Republican creed about small and limited government, personal freedom, liberty, strong national defense, belief in multilateral organizations. And, you know, what we've seen over these last years is the total hollowing out of the party from a principles perspective. It's a principleless organization. It's really an organized conspiracy to maintain power for the purposes of self-interest on a lot of its elected officials. It's become utterly infidelitous to the concepts of liberty and freedom. The sad reality is it's become an authoritarianish party. We have a lawless president who assaults our institutions, the rule of law, who's threatening the American people with deployments of 75,000 federal stormtroopers to cities across America, mm-hmm. where local, county, and state law enforcement are the appropriate jurisdictional agencies. And so when you look out at the sweep of the Republican Party, it's been utterly corrupted in this moment, in this hour. And we stand opposed to it. And our mission is to defeat Donald Trump, to play a part in the coalition, that's work it is to do that, and to defeat Trumpism. And so what you've seen is a loosening of the sordid furies of race and division and the teeming racial animosities that I think I was very naive about that boil below the surface of so many in this country. We have 35% of the country that's completely surrendered their intellectual agency, has effectively joined a cult of personality. That cult is illiberal, authoritarianish. It is devoid of fact and reality, built on conspiracy theories, and there's no conceivable repair, you know, between people like myself and the Michael Cernanoviches and Ann Coulters and the other race baiters and dividers and Nazi apologists, you know, that have came to the surface from the fetid swamp of Trumpism.
You've had quite, as I mentioned, quite a career in politics and such, but also a fascinating look at your views shows some interesting stuff, including in 2013, you, along with 74 other Republicans, signed a brief to the Supreme Court in the support of overturning Proposition 8 here in California. You were quoted as saying, the die is cast on this issue when you look at the percentage of younger voters who support gay marriage. As Dick Cheney said years ago, freedom means freedom for everybody. And then you officially in 2018, I believe, withdrew from the GOP over Trump's policy of separating immigrant families at the U.S. border with Mexico. Talk about that.
I gave a speech titled The Conservative Case for Gay Marriage in 2009. And when you had the job I did at the Republican convention in 2008, you're invited to go speak to nearly every state delegation, every group, and you know, you're a high-ranking campaign official for the nominees. So you're feted with all these parties and everything. I only chose to make one public appearance and chose to make it symbolic, and it was to speak before the log cabin Republicans. While I didn't endorse gay marriage, I think I made it clear where I stood personally on the issue and didn't view it as appropriate to speak out on it while I was running a national campaign for a candidate who opposed it. But as soon as that race was over, then I had an opportunity to speak in the issue. I gave a speech about it, and I was proud to sign the amicus brief because at the core, you know, my deep belief is that the American charter, the American creed, we find that in the Declaration of Independence. And the words that all men are created equal and endowed by their creator with inalienable rights, amongst them life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, it's fundamentally a before and after moment in all of human civilization. It's one of the most radical ideas ever put to paper by the mind of man. And it was a revolutionary idea, and its power has lit the world. And the story of the country is the story of the gap closing between that perfect idea and ideal and our very flawed reality. when Martin Luther King marched in Washington, he stood on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial, the monument, the temple to the great emancipator, and he said, I'm here to collect a promissory note. And so when you look at the totality of the American experience, the story of the country is the story of us moving ever more closer to those ideas and those ideals, and they apply to gay people also. And so I do deeply believe freedom means freedom for everybody. And I have never understood, the premise with rejecting the idea that gay men and women could be married. I mean, I think that they largely deserve to be as unhappy as the rest of us, as I've always said.
I've heard that from comedians before. It's a great line.
A little dry humor there.
You have also said we have an America right now at this hour to understand that you have a lawless president, a vile president, a corrupt president, a mean, cruel president who's seeking to remake the world order. And as far as the Republican Party, you also said it's fully the party of Trump. It's corrupt, sure, indecent, and immoral, with the exception of a few governors. It's filled with feckless cowards who disgrace and dishonor the legacies of its great party leaders. Today, the GOP has become a danger to our democracy and our values. Steve Schmidt is with us. You see him on MSNBC all the time. He is a co-founder of the Lincoln Project. My colleague Pete Fappiano is here.
Steve, a tremendous pleasure to be able to speak with you. How are you?
Great to be with you. Great. How are you?
I'm doing fine, and I look forward to each of the Lincoln Project's new ads, and I am a tremendous admirer of the work that you all are doing. Particularly difficult since that you have always been, members of the Republican Party, and it's not always easy to see an institution that you were part of and who you thought shared your beliefs go astray. I think all you have to do to make a comparison between the Republican Party that we remember back in the good old days, such as they were, is read a biography of Eisenhower and look at where we are today, and it's 180 degrees. One of the things that a lot of groups have come out against Trump's reelection, you're doing things beyond that, though. You're targeting, selected senators and congresspeople and governors and so forth, which I think is essential to capturing some of those down ballot races. Can you give us a little hint, perhaps, like of some of your strategy or how the results are coming along?
Well, we'll be going on into Alaska, Montana, and Maine tomorrow with multi-million dollar buys in those three Senate races. And our goal is to defeat every Republican senator that's up in the cycle that's gettable. And the map is expanding. I think Lindsey Graham, for example, is vulnerable. John Cornyn might be vulnerable. Mitch McConnell could be vulnerable late in the game, but there has to be a price paid for the capitulation of sense, of decency, to this immoral and incompetent president. The Republican senators, no one is asking any of these people to storm Omaha Beach. What was expected of them was to be faithful to their oaths of offices as members of the upper body of a bicameral, co-equal branch of government, and to put a check on his excesses. The assaults on our institutions, on the rule of law, the illegitimacy of his pardons, the corruption, the meanness, the cruelty. No one had a stand for this. And one of the incredible facts, I don't know that many people know this, but it's true, is that after the gassing and beating of peaceful protesters exercising their First Amendment rights in Lafayette Square, that we all watched with horror on television, there was a Senate policy lunch, and you had the reporters watching them come in. There was a cordon there, and the reporters, because of social distancing, are standing behind it. And the senators walked by one, doing the geriatric shuffle, most of them, and not answering any of the questions, not being responsive in any way. But the amazing thing about it is that what happened in Lafayette Square never came up in a discussion in the lunch of the Republican majority in the United States Senate. If you think about that, how incredible is that?
That is incredible.
It's beyond belief. And so They all need to go, and we're going to be doing our part to make that so. Trumpism is going to need to be repudiated and burned down. We have 35% of the country that's enthralled to the worst president the country's ever seen, and that's a problem. It's not healthy in a democracy, and what we see all over the world is democratic rescission. Poland's really not, by any objective measurement, a functioning democracy. We see democratic decay in this country. You're going to see, when Mrs. Merkel goes, a rise of a far-right German party really quickly. You'll see an energetic far-right movement in France making another run at Macron. We live in a time where everything that we thought was foundationally unshakable turns out not to be. It's all much more fragile than we thought. And anybody who thinks that the lights aren't flashing yellow at a quickening pace here and moving to red faster than any of us might like to understand, they are. We're in a lot of trouble.
And we've all seen the recent polls. Your gut feeling, as a longtime political consultant and such, what do you see happening in November? I mean, how do you think this is going to play out?
I see a wipeout and a massive national repudiation of this. And I think it's a very good night for the Democrats. But I do think, and there's a author, academic, commentator named Sarah Kendzior, who's an expert on authoritarian movements. And she makes this point, I couldn't agree more violently with it, which is that Trump has abandoned really any pretense of trying to win the election.
Yeah.
And what you see is him trying to create enough chaos and confusion that if it gets close, he can steal it. And you've never had, and wrap your head around this, right? And we've had peaceful transitions of power in our country uninterrupted from World War, Civil War, assassinations to 1797. We have a president of the United States who says out loud that he may not go if he is defeated in an election. And our entire system it rests on this premise that
right.
One side has to be willing to lose, because it's the loser who vests legitimacy in the winner by acknowledging the legitimacy of the election process, where there are rules. Generally, the person with the most votes wins, or the person with the requisite number of electoral college votes. So we're in a frightening moment. And, listen, when you see these men on these streets armed like they are, doing the tasks of local law enforcement against the objection of state and local authorities, and the Republicans in the Congress who present themselves as limited government conservatives, are you kidding me? Are you kidding me?
Yeah. Pete?
Just real quickly, Steve, one of the things that we noticed in 2016 was that Trump's polling numbers, regardless of what he said or did or whatever, remained pretty steady. And, of course, Hillary Clinton was not the favored candidate of many people who, flipped a coin almost. But what we're seeing now is Biden's numbers are increasing, whereas Trump's are dropping. And I'm taking that as a favorable sign that this is not going to be a repeat of 2016, where the polls were dramatically off from the results.
Well, I'm very proud of the work of the Lincoln Project and the men and women, young people who are involved in it and putting their energy into it, all of our coalition partners. And, we're playing a small role in a coalition that, spans the realm from Bernie Sanders on the left flank to, us. And, we've heard him and we've caught him and we've heard him with our ads and with his response to them. And we are seeing his numbers move into the 30s now,
right,
moving into that political death zone. And we're going to keep at him and chase and hunt him down. And we got to repudiate him. Now, it's just as simple as this. This can't be the 2004 election, right? This needs to be a significant national repudiation of this insanity.
Yeah.
We're the epicenter of coronavirus death and suffering in the world, leading math and science this country, because we have a fool sitting behind the resolute desk. And We have no capacity to recover from this, to begin to renew the country. We have so many problems that we're just out of time to deal with now, that it require pragmatism, require people have the ability to look at Americans they disagree with politically and see not an enemy but an opponent and maybe someone who's a friend after 5 o'clock. We have a massive amount of things to fix, and Donald Trump has been an extremely consequential president in the sense that in 3.5 years he's really ended the American century such as it was, that spanned the period from the end of World War II in the world that Franklin Roosevelt conceived, that was architected and built by Harry Truman and maintenance from Eisenhower through Obama. And the world becomes a much more dangerous place without an America asserting its best ideas and ideals, an America that is detached from its allies, an America that's not a light and a guide to the world about free people governing themselves, but instead looks like one of the worst, most mismanaged banana republics in the world.
Steve Schmidt, bless you, sir. It's an honor to have you. As I said, we've had many of your colleagues on a regular basis from the Lincoln Project. And I appreciate your time, and hopefully we can talk again.
Absolutely. We look forward to it. Thank you.
All right, Steve Schmidt, thank you so much.